Good morning and welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Perek Tesvov, the 15th Perek of Sefer Yeshayahu. It is a very short Perek, only containing 9 psukim. Remember, we're in the section now where Yeshayahu is now turning outwards to the world. He's no longer focusing only on Israel. And in the last 2 parakim, he focused on Babylon, which could have been a code word for Assyria, as some of the Farshim pointed out. But nonetheless, he is now turning to another nation. That is the nation of Moab. That's going to be the focus of Perek Tesvov and Perek Teszion. So this is a basic summary of the section. And his description is, again, as beautifully, beautifully poetic. He describes that as night falls, as darkness comes, Moab will be destroyed. Ki belel shudad or Moab nidma. Ki belel shudad kir Moab nidma. Going to be, as the night falls, there's going to be the destruction of Moab. And as the shadow approaches, they will call to their gods. They will wail. They will pull out their hair in mourning. They will wear sackcloths. The cities will be weeping communally to avert tragedy. And the implication of this perek, of this chapter, is it won't help. You can imagine all of Moab knowing that the danger is imminent and nothing will help it. And Yeshayahu says famously, beautifully, Libi leMoav Yizak b'Yerichaha. My heart goes out to weep for Moab. It was a country so powerful, so successful, the rivers will dry up and all the vegetation will cease. Because of the destruction, all the population will try to hide all their spoils in the remaining trees because they have nowhere to take it. The rivers will turn to blood from the carnage as they will be mowed down, and those who will not be killed will be hunted by lions. That's the description that Yeshayahu gives of Moab. Again, the word used to describe this prophecy is maso. Maso literally means a burden. This is the burden of the future which he is giving to them. A few things to think about in this short perek. Number one is, what are these lions that are going to consume them after this destruction? So to understand this in context, Rashi points out that the overall theme of this perek is that Sanherib, the Assyrians led by the general Sanherib, will conquer the area of Moab. Moab is the area to the east, the southeast of Israel, and it will be conquered by Sanherib. When that happens, once Sanherib has done his job, the lions of the field, according to the Radak and the Malbims, suggest, because there's such desolation, there's no fear of animals, the animals have no fear of human beings, they'll come into the cities and kill the rest of the people. Whereas the Metzudas David and Rashi suggest that actually this refers to Nebuchadnezzar of Babel, meaning to say, what Assyria leaves behind, Babylon will finish up. And that's what the prophecy of Moab. A terrifying thing is Moab pegged into this? Is Moab able to change this? This is a question we have to think to ourselves. Is this maso something which is escapable or not? It sounds like it will be as we move into the perek tomorrow. Why is this happening to them? Why such a severe destruction? So Rashi points to Pasuk Zion, which says the following curious words. He says, Al-Kain Yisra Asa, because they did Yisra. What does Yisra mean? So Rashi quotes and suggests that it's because they were ingrats. They were not grateful for what they should have been. Ultimately, Moab is a descendant of Lot. He is Lot's child from his daughter. And the nation was founded from Avram Avinu's family. But Avram Avinu did a lot to save Lot. Avram Avinu tried to, first of all, take Lot with him. Lot, that didn't work out. So when Lot went to Sodom, Avram Avinu went and fought despite his own danger, went to fight the 4 kings to save Lot, and he did so. And then when Sodom is going to be destroyed, Avram Avinu is praying for Sodom and ultimately for Lot, and Lot is saved in his chutz. So Lot owes a lot to Avram Avinu, but it's interesting that the people of Moab don't seem to have that inbuilt gratitude to their sister nation, Israel. And 2 examples that Rashi gives are that when Sennacherib was actually exiling the northern tribes, the northern kingdom of Israel, the Moabites stood on the sidelines and taunted them, saying, "Ah, you belong in Haran. Remember, Avram Avinu came up from up north where Assyria is. So that's where you're going back to." And they sort of sat there on the sidelines, taunting them. And the second option that Rashi gives is actually more actively involved in the problem, and that is that they assisted Sennacherib in the siege of Shomron against Israel for 3 years. And that's fascinating because, as much as they're trying to curry favor with Assyria, ultimately Assyria doesn't care about that. Assyria turned on them the next moment. So all the goody-good relationships that they were trying to create for themselves ultimately fell apart in the end. The most fascinating pasuk by far of this entire perek is Yeshayahu's sort of emotional aside, in which he says, "Libi le Moav Yizak," my heart is calling to Moav. What does that mean? So the Malbim says a very interesting thing. The Malbim suggests that he's actually giving them advice. If you read the continuation of the pasuk, he says, "Ad soar eglas shlishiya." He's saying to them, you know what you should do? Is escape. Run to Tzor. Tzor was the place that Lot himself actually ran to in Sefer Bereishis when escaping the destruction of Sodom. Fascinating. But he says, run to Tzor, because rather than fighting, don't fight the Assyrians. They're going to destroy you. So don't fight them. Escape and try to reconsolidate your troops. He's trying to give them advice to help them escape, which is the way the Malbim reads this. Rashi says actually more straight to the point. He says that the Nevi'im of Bnei Yisrael, not like the Nevi'im of the other nations. When Bilam was hired by Moab, no less, to curse Israel, he was pretty unequivocal about the fact that he hated Israel and he wanted to see their destruction. And he tried to give advice against Israel. He did not want Israel to exist. Yeshayahu over here is the prophet of the nation of Israel, who is the sworn enemy at this point in time of Moab. But at the same time, he doesn't want their destruction. He's weeping over the prophecies which he is expressing about their imminent destruction. Such a different way of looking at it. If you think about the sort of Judaism's perspective to the rest of the world over here, there couldn't be anything more further from this. It's interesting just to contrast this to more recent history. Obviously, a little bit different, but just to think about this in these terms. In 1903, Theodor Herzl, who was going around the Western Europe, and in fact the Ottoman Empire, to try to arrange that the Jews should have a homeland to escape the rampant anti-Semitism in Eastern and Western Europe, he actually went into the Vatican and visited Pope Pius X. And he broached the idea that was mentioned in the Sixth Zionist Congress, which had just recently happened, that there should be a place called Palestine, they should use this place as a safe haven for the Jews of Russia for fleeing the persecution or following the Kishinev pogrom of 1903 and many, many other pogroms that came from before that. But ultimately, Cardinal Raphael Mary Duval ordained that the church's policy was explained in such matters that as long as the Jews deny the divinity of Christ, the Catholics would not make a declaration in their favor. So let them rot, let them die, let them be killed and massacred while the police look on and the peasants murder them mercilessly in the streets. That's the response of the church when Theodor Herzl asked about a Jewish homeland to escape persecution. Think about the difference when Yeshayahu is talking about Moab. Yeshayahu is talking to a nation who is aiding and abetting the destruction of Israel. And Yeshayahu is talking about ultimately their fall. And Yeshayahu says, Libi, my heart, as I call out, Lemoav Yizak, as I'm crying for Moab, I don't want to see them destroyed, even though they're my enemy. What a different perspective. Think about the level that the Israeli army goes to protect those who are trying to kill them. I remember once hearing a soldier who was in the 2014 operation in Gaza, and he was talking in his speech about how he and his friends had to enter into a hospital to be able to capture the terrorists, instead of bombing the entire hospital from which the terrorists were shooting, in order to try to save the civilians who they were using as civilian casualties and human shields. They had to go in and they lost their friends in this battle fighting the terrorists. Why? Because even though we have to fight these people, we don't want to hurt them. That's an inborn natural tendency. Where does it come from? This comes from Yeshayahu. This is one of the places in Tanakh we see this. We see this elsewhere where it comes that we don't sing Shira on the falling of our enemies. We don't say full Hallel on Pesach at the last days when our enemies are dying. And this is the notion. This is a revolutionary concept of dealing with enemies. We don't want their destruction and we weep for their pain. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.